Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Hey, good morning, good morning. Good Saturday morning to you, the last day of September. Shout out to Woody and Johnny in Virginia Beach, Norfolk. They're listening live stream to Your Health. And we are also sponsored by, we just picked up a new sponsor, Rebecca's Natural Food over there in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. And I use their customer research team all the time. They are really a good place. So now, I have a segment that I like to call Saturday at the Market, where I go to the city market and I interview folks. And I got a good, really good interview this morning, several, and it's about the markets. And it gives folks an idea of what's going on right here in Charlottesville and this wonderful city market. Of course, the weather today was really cooperative. Absolutely gorgeous out there, about 73, 74 degrees. It's going to be awesome. So if you get a chance, if you're listening to this, you still have about 50 minutes to get down to the market and enjoy some real food. It's so important. So without further ado, we will go to Saturday at the Market.
Good morning. This is MC Blair. I'm at the Charlottesville City Market down on Water Street, where I come every week, most weeks, while it's open. And I'm at Bel Air Farm Stand, and we're going to be talking with Nate from Bel Air Farm. I've been there. It's on the Hardware River in southern Albemarle. Beautiful, beautiful farm. And Jamie is one of the owners there, and he took me on a tour. Tell me about Bel Air Farm, Nate.
We're a big CSA in town. We have about 450 members, and we have 30 acres in production. Mostly we do vegetables, but we have quite a few livestock as well, pigs, chickens, and beef cows. There's a cheese operation on the property as well. Yeah, I think we're the biggest CSA in town, and we're always here at the Saturday market from 7 to 12, and then at the Mead Market on Wednesdays as well.
And where's the Mead Market?
It's at
Mead Park, right there off Carlton, is that it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yep. Right here in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So I understand that you have some sharing with other farmers, is that correct? Different meats and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have a beef operation that we lease our pasture out to, and he rotates through some of our vegetable fields as well to help us with like our fertility and stuff. And then we also have 20 Paces, and they're a dairy operation, and they all sheep and goat, and they turn all their milk into cheese, and they rotate through our vegetable fields as well.
That's awesome. So without having animals, you have been able to successfully have the model that the animals and the vegetables all are one living organism,
yeah,
the farm.
A full circle. And then our operation as well has a flock of hens, and then we do meat chickens and then the pigs. And we rotate both the meat birds and the laying hens through our vegetable fields as well.
That is so good. So how long have you been with Bel Air Farm, Nate?
This is my second year, and I'll be coming back next year. Yeah.
Okay. What are your plans for the future?
I'd like to be involved in sustainable agriculture, I think, and make a career out of it. I'm not sure if I want to be an owner of a farm or, you know, manage another person's farm or an already existing farm, but I think we'll just have to see.
Yeah, you're young. You've got plenty of time, you know. So that's really cool because we need more people in agriculture to supply real food to Charlottesville. And let me get your opinion on something. I've always maintained that if the city fathers got together and decided that they were going to do what it was ever necessary to provide real food to maybe folks less fortunate that have low access or even no access to real food, if they were to buy into that and do what they had to do to provide real food during the winter, and then in the summer, obviously, let the farmers do what they do, do you think that's a viable solution?
I think maybe a combination of plans, you know, might be able to come into act. You know, maybe people understanding more about local food and having some education around that.
So education, right.
Yeah, and just sort of understanding what it means to eat locally. I think that it is possible to provide the community with fresh produce maybe not quite year-round, but almost year-round, mm-hmm. in terms of greens and things that do a little better in cooler climates. I'm not sure what that would look like, but I would be interested to see or hear any plans.
So when I was there visiting with Jamie and you guys, I noticed a school bus there with a lot of kids running around, and it looked like they were having a ball. So what does that program look like?
It's not so much of a program as, you know, any school is welcome to contact us and try and figure out or schedule a day to come out and volunteer for a little while and get a tour of the farm. And we also have St. Anne's Belfield comes out for a whole week, and, you know, every single day we have another class out. So from K through 8 we get all the grades. So yeah, anyone is always welcome to just sort of contact Jamie and anyone who's affiliated with the school, and we can figure out some sort of date for them to come out.
And that's Jamie at Bel Air Farm. How do they contact him?
If you were just to look up Bel Air Farm, you'd find his email pretty quick.
Thank you very much, Nate. I am at the Hog Haven Farm Stand, and we're talking with one half of that great team at Hog Haven Farm, Verde Schaefer and Rob Staples. Hey, Verde, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you?
Doing very well. How's business?
Business is good.
It's got to be good. Yeah. That's great. And so why is business so good?
Well, we sell our pork. We've been selling really well.
Pastured pork,
right? Pasture-raised, yep. Heritage breed, animal welfare certified, of course. We also do a breakfast sandwich that's gained a lot of popularity.
And it's great. That's what I'm getting.
Yep.
Now, you guys have this farm stand as well as one in Northern Virginia and on the James in Richmond, right?
Right. South of the James Market in Forest Hill Park.
So, Verde, tell us a little bit about your famous sandwich.
We use our pasteurized pork, a pasteurized egg, grass-fed cheddar cheese, and a locally baked English muffin.
Man, that sounds delicious. And I was here the other day, and one of your customers said the best thing about it was the aioli.
Yeah, it is. It's addictive.
Yep. I like Rob's special sauce, quite frankly.
Yep. We call that the Hossam sauce.
Hossam sauce?
Hossam.
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 Hossam with an H.
Yes.
Got it. So I am talking with a couple of customers, hungry customers, here at Hog Haven Farm Stand. What keeps you coming back?
We end up coming here for breakfast most Saturdays. It's quiet here in the mornings, early, and the food's really good.
Great. So I take it eating real food, pastured eggs, pastured poultry, pastured pork, is important to you guys. Is that correct?
Yes. It's good to know where your food comes from.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was just going to add, it is important to us, and although sometimes it's not as easy on the weekdays with crazy hectic schedules, it is nice to be able to have an option on the weekend and still support what we think is a good value for the community and for ourselves.
You mentioned community. We here on To Your Health are always talking about community-based agriculture, working with a community and all the different farmers. So that's important to you?
Yeah, I think it's really nice to be able to support each other. So,
I agree. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So now we're coming up to a sweet farm stand. Cocoa and spice. Chocolate is their specialty. And I'm talking with Jennifer
Moet.
And she is the owner of this stand. So tell us about what you're doing with chocolate.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for chatting with me today.
My pleasure.
No, I just really love chocolate, and so I use it as an ingredient to make really delicious treats. I absolutely love hot chocolate, so I make these drinking chocolate mixes that I'm taking actual chocolate, grinding it down with some unsweetened cocoa powder to make it a little bit less sweet and extra delicious. And then I'm also using different spices. I make a Mexican hot chocolate with chipotle chili and cinnamon, coconut and curry clusters, chili mango that I dip in dark chocolate. Just to kind of keep things interesting. I have a Cajun bark as well, which is white chocolate, which is traditionally super sweet, but I add some heat to it with Creole seasoning and macadamia nuts.
Oh my gosh, that sounds delicious. I love spice too. So the cocoa that you buy, I understand that's you deal with a company that deals with fair trade farms, is that?
Yeah, so I'm a chocolatier, so I purchase chocolate from a European chocolate maker who works directly with cacao plantations around the world. In some cases, I use a blend of beans, and in other cases I'm using single origin chocolate. I have one from Tanzania, and I have another one from Guayaquil that I use for some of my chocolate bars.
Oh, man. So I'm picking up a pod, a cocoa pod. Is that what it is?
This is a cocoa pod that's been dried out. Normally there would be a pulp inside that gets fermented off, but this has been dried inside of the beans, and the beans are what are roasted, ground, and turned into chocolate.
This is really neat. So I don't know if you guys can hear this, but those are the beans rattling around in the pod. Sounds like we could do some salsa music here, you know? I feel like dancing.
You get all the senses with chocolate. So.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jennifer. Really appreciate
that. Absolutely. Thank you.
How's business so far?
It's been going really well, and I have a new storefront where people can come and shop over on Stewart Street,
right?
Which is between Mead Ave and East High Street. So you can just go to cocoaandspice.com, and you can find all the info.
Thanks. So now we are talking with Elena's Pies and Produce, and we're talking to Elena herself, and the sign says vegetables grown without chemical pesticides, fertilizers, or herbicides ever. And that's important.
That's right. And
thank you.
I guess you better ask
take some time for a little commerce here. So why is that important to you, without the chemicals, you know, all that sort of thing?
Well, it's a health concern. And first off, I don't think that pesticides are particularly good for people. I also feel that it's important to nourish your soil by using cover cropping and rotating these cover crops back into the soil rather than adding fertilizers, which are generally based from petroleum products and whatever. And we have a real problem in this country regarding agriculture and the way big ag is, and with regarding loss of topsoil. There is no fertility or life within the soil. Microorganisms just probably don't do too well in the way that conventional agriculture is practiced, and we just don't have healthy soils. We're losing our soils, and all the soil that are pesticided and over-fertilized, that is seeping out of the soil when it rains heavily into our waterways, causing additional problems. Like, you know, you hear about saving the bay. Well, this is a way to promote saving our streams and then, of course, the bay in the end here in Virginia.
That is so important, and you are right about we have been raping the earth.
Yes, I'm a proponent of regenerative agriculture. Hey, Allie.
Regenerative agriculture, which is also part of the biodynamic model.
Yeah.
The farm as a...
He's interviewing.
The farm is a living whole.
Yeah.
A living organism.
You're welcome to... He promotes commerce while he talks to people.
Absolutely. Commerce is very important.
Yes.
Yeah. Good morning.
I read an article that was entitled, Squirmy Soil is the Best.
I think it is. Indeed, because I would guarantee that if you check the soils of many conventional farmers, that there would be very little in it, especially when they are promoting Roundup in their cropping of corn and soy, which is, you know, primary agricultural crops, it seems to be here in Virginia. And also when you don't cover crop and then till this green manure back into your soil, you find that the soil is not enriched. I mean, you know, an enriched soil really holds moisture better. It contributes to the health of the plant. I think runoff is probably decreased when you have a rich, enriched soil rather than one that is...
We need soil more like a sponge,
yeah,
rather than a hard pan runoff.
Yeah. Although that, you know, the whole idea between Roundup Ready is that you don't have to till, you just spray it to death.
Understand.
Yeah. And dry it out.
Yes. I'm here at the Carpe Donut Farm Stand with owner Matt Rohde, and I've known Matt for a number of years, and he just told me I could ask him for anything, or ask him anything I like, and so I asked him for money, and he said, well, you can ask me that, but but I think you know the answer anyway. So Matt, tell me about what you've been doing with your distribution company, Perfect Harmony.
Absolutely. Now, we've nice to see you, Mike.
Thank you.
I've been working with selling the Carpe Donuts on Amazon, Amazon.com, as an alternative to selling through the grocery stores. We like to distribute locally with a local food hub, but like a lot of small companies which have a innovative product to sell, we'd like to expand the market and go further afield. We're looking at Amazon as a very disruptive mechanism to go directly to our customers. And so we've been successfully distributing with them multiple cases a week at a really nice cost point because our Perfect Harmony distribution model is a collaborative model between producers, a second company that will help manage a relationship with Amazon.
You are listening to Your Health right here at 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, now streaming live at 947wpvc.org. And we're going to take a little break here, and we will be back. And we're back. We were right in the middle of Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut, and he was talking about Perfect Harmony and how they have employed Amazon to distribute local foods right here in Charlottesville to a wider customer base, which of course will bring more money back to the community. It is a great idea. It's cutting out those big distribution middlemen who they want too much from the local producers. And as most of you know, or at least could possibly glean from what you see, is that local, you know, these guys are on really tight margins already. They work very, very hard, and they certainly deserve way more than what they would get by using a large distributor. So Matt Rohde has put together the Perfect Harmony, and quite frankly, it is. It's the Perfect Harmony. So we'll go back to Matt.
We've got several of our local producers currently working on setting up that distribution. We should have 4 to 5 local food producers being sold through Perfect Harmony over the next month or so.
That is great. Sort of like the community of commerce.
Absolutely.
Community is important. Now, I know that you, when you started Carpe Donut, you were using pasture-raised eggs, organic sugar, organic flour, and you're still doing that, right?
All still true there. We've added organic spices. We didn't start with organic sugar. That was something we were able to layer in as we went along. Some of it has to do with the access to distribution. Ironically, the absolute least expensive place and most reliable place for me to buy organic sugar is our local neighborhood Costco. I've got relationships with big national distributors for a lot of these commodities. But right now, for instance, I'm interviewing for a new organic cocoa powder because Frontier Herbs, that I used to get from UNFI, doesn't make organic cocoa powder anymore. I got to find something new.
How do you treat your work? Matt, every time I see them, they're smiling. What's up with that?
Well, mostly they're hopefully smiling because they're mostly my family. But since we've crossed that threshold into having employees, we really wanted to have a principle of a living wage. I think the living wage movement is one that's going to come back around many times in Charlottesville as a city that's concerned with things like social justice and, you know, the impact of business on the community environment. So I also think it's important just to pay people very well and ask a lot of them whenever possible. But we've had a living wage commitment within our company's model for the last 10 years.
That is so admirable.
It's not necessarily purely altruistic. It's something that we need to have a smaller number of more engaged people because what we do, ironically, is kind of complicated. It's simply making donuts and organic coffee, but we're often setting up mobile operations. We're traveling pretty far from Charlottesville, and I got to put together a team of people who can do that with a lot of initiative, a lot of ability to keep things safe and make things run efficiently.
So I guess what you found is that by paying people a living wage, you get not only more out of them, but care about the business more.
Well, I was an employee for 30 years before I ever started a business, and I think that when people aren't making enough to live, it's very distracting. It's really hard to operate in the world when you don't have enough money to make ends meet. So.
Okay. I'm here with a customer of Carpe Donut, and tell me, what keeps you coming back?
Well, the donuts and the, of course, and just the variety, the quality, and are they organic too?
Yes.
All the above then.
All the above, right. Okay, thank you.
Hey, how are you? I am now at the Caramont Farm Stand. The owner, Gail Hobbs Page, has been a friend for more years than I can remember. I am talking with...
Isabella Zucchini.
Isabel
Zucchini.
Zucchini, okay. And you're full-time with Gail, correct?
I am, yes.
And what do you like about working at Caramont Farm?
I like the diversity of it. I love getting to work with animals. That was probably what drew me there in the beginning. I love getting to work outside, but I also love the food aspect of it. I love that Caramont is a place that kind of combines artisan production with farming, with animal care, community. Also, you know, we bring people out to the farm for many different reasons. I get to hang out with chefs. I get to see how our product goes from just goat's milk to a dish at a restaurant.
Farm to table.
Farm to table.
Yep. That gets overused, I think. So when people come to tour the farm, which I know you encourage, at CaramontFarm.com to find out all the information about those tours and the opportunities, are you involved in those tours?
Yeah. So I am technically the events person, among other things, but Gail and I are usually doing the tours there. And it's not just tours. You know, we'll do tours and tastings where people come out and they see the dairy and they see the farm and get to try the cheeses and do all that sort of stuff. But we also do cooking classes. We do cheese making classes. We do open houses. Our farm is really popular in the spring when all the baby goats are born.
Goat cuddling.
Goat cuddling. So people come out by the hundreds see a baby goat. So that's our most popular time. But we, you know, we do farm dinners. We do a lot of different things to kind of get the community interested in farming and where their food comes from. I think that's the most important thing.
I agree. And knowing where your food comes from is very important.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell you guys that Gail Hobbs Page is the one who turned me on to this entire movement. And of course, it's a healthy movement. And that's where I started getting healthy. I also wanted to make a statement. When I went there, I just felt that the whole farm was one living organism. Am I on the right track there?
You're definitely on the right track. Everyone that works there does a piece of everything. I think that's super important. And Gail is so dynamic. She is interested in so many different things, and you can see that in the farm. It's a labor of love. You can see how much she loves the animals, and she, you know, makes sure that all of her employees also have the goat love, you know, but are interested in the whole process. Everyone has to milk. Everyone has to, like, be involved in every piece of it. So you're on the right track.
Thank you very much. So that's Caramont Farm, and you can visit their farm stand right here at the City Market as long as it's open. And they go through December.
Through December.
That was great. That was Saturday at the market. And I had a good time. I bought a lot of good food for me and my family. Very, very important. You're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Now, I saw this article. It says, why does local food matter? And a lot of people ask me that. Oh, come on. It's local. Who cares where it's grown? Well, the local food system is, they're more vibrant. It adds to the community, keeps money in the community. Wendell Berry, he's an author, just a really good author. You should get some of his books. Just look him up, W-E-N-D-E-L-L, Berry. Eaters must understand that eating takes place inescapably in the world. It does. You mean people got to eat? Imagine that. And it's inescapably an agricultural act. And it's how we eat determines to a considerable extent how the world is used. That's very important. How we eat determines how the world is used. So if you're eating local and, you know, sustainable, regenerative soils, meat that is on regenerative soil, you're contributing to a better system, a sounder system. We heard earlier from Elena about how the soil is being completely depleted by Big Ag, and that's what they do. They rape the earth, and that's the right word there, folks. I know it's strong, but if you've ever known a gal that's been raped and you've talked to her, you'll get some insight about how I feel Big Ag is doing to our country. Many people feel that you need big farms to feed the U.S. And without all that corn and soy, which is really bad for the human body, then, you know, we would be out. You know, we would be starving. And that's just simply not true. That's what they want you to think, so that they can continue to rape the earth and put the money in the bank. Well, the problem is that if we continue on this model, on the big food, factory food system model, we will destroy this country, and we're getting very, very close. Trust me on this. We are getting very close to completely destroying our ability to grow nutritious food. Much of the food that you see on the shelf, it looks like food. But in fact, many of it is anti-nutrient. It will sap your nutrients away from your body rather than add nutrients to your body, thus keeping you sick and, oh yeah, fat. Have you seen the number of folks out there that are overweight? And many of them think, well, gosh, I'm eating my servings of vegetables, and I'm eating my fruit, and, you know, I'm drinking good milk, and I'm eating great bread, and, you know, from, you know, whatever big name is out there. Of course, I can't name any names, right? Products, exactly. But anyway, so they think that they're eating correctly. And why am I getting so fat? And why do I have to go to the doctor every month or every 2 months? Well, it's because the food you're eating is sapping nutrients from your body as opposed to putting nutrients in your body. And then if it's been raised with chemical fertilizers and pesticides that are sprayed there, and the fertilizers get into the roots, which gets into the food, you end up getting all that in there. So not only are you having an empty food with tons of calories and no nutrition, you're putting poison in your body on top of that. So, gee, I wonder why you're sick. I wonder why you're fat. Diabetes is rampant in this country right now. Overweight. We are the fattest country in the world, and it is appalling because we don't have to be there. And the current administration and the current Congress, they don't like science. You can tell. They don't believe in science. If science interferes with commerce, well, then we don't like science. Well, I'm getting tired of it. I don't know about you. I really am getting tired of it. The eating locally produced food is a significant way to impact how the world is used. When we support the local food system by eating local, there are many benefits. First, it tastes better, and it's way better for you. Now, this is something I didn't know for a long time, but if you take a vegetable and it's been harvested in the last 1 or 2 days locally, it retains its flavor and, more importantly, its nutrients. Vegetables that have been cut for more than a week or, you know, 10 days, whatever, is maybe one third of the nutrients. They do go away. Now, it's like you take something, it's picked before it's even ripe. Well, now how nutrient dense is that? It's not even ripe yet, right? Then they spray it with these gases to, quote, ripen them, and then ship them over 1,000 miles, sometimes many thousands of miles, store them in a warehouse before it ever gets to the grocery store. So There you go, right? And that's fresh food. That's like a head of broccoli or a head of lettuce, not even processed food. And it's very low in nutrients when you buy it out of a grocery store. So fewer food miles are also better for the environment. When food travels long distances by trains, planes, automobiles, oh, by the way, that was a good movie, there's a significant carbon footprint attached. Processing and packaging also contribute to that carbon footprint. A vibrant local food system promotes genetic diversity of both plants and livestock. When industrial agriculture utilizes monocrops, and by that we're talking about wide swaths of corn and soy, again, neither one of them are good for us, large areas of one particular crop, small local farms also grow several different types of tomatoes or kale or even okra. Okra is very good for you, lots of antioxidants, and as a matter of fact, if you get it fresh, then you can sear it off and put a nice patina on it, throw a little spices on there, and you've got a highly nutritious, dense food that's really good. Local farmers take pride in offering a variety of flavors and colors. And then finally, by eating local food, we spend our food dollars in our own community. Of course, I said that at the top. This is an investment in our future and in food security. Food security is absolutely important to our community. And part of that is isolating ourselves from the outside markets. And that's really important. It's one of my goals for Charlottesville is to provide food access to folks that wouldn't normally have it or have low access abilities, and also food security. Growing as much of our own food right here will keep us healthier, it will reduce type 2 diabetes, and it will lower the average weight of our citizens and turn them into food citizens. That's awesome. So we're going to take another break here, and we will be back. And we are back right here at To Your Health. I had the pleasure recently of talking with Jenny Hopkins of Big Arms Farm. And that's the way she named that farm. Big Arms. She likes to give hugs. And I actually met her husband, Jeff Kahn, and it was just a delight sitting on their porch in the woods in their home, having a cup of coffee and then going around the farm. But we start off talking to Jenny at the Featured Farmer Friday at Pippin Hill. So enjoy.
Hey, this is MC Blair. I am with Jenny Hopkins of Big Arms Farm right here at Pippin Hill in the Featured Farmer Friday, a very important aspect to the agritourism movement that Pippin Hill is a big part of. Hi, Jenny Hopkins. How are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Thanks.
So you, all your flowers and your garlic and your peppers, they're all organic. Grown, is that correct?
Yes, we'd say ecologically grown. An organic word has sort of been co-opted, and well, you have to be certified, I guess, to use that word. So we say we grow it without any chemical pesticides or fertilizers in an ecological, sustainable way.
Oh, that's good. It's almost biodynamic in a way.
Yeah, sure. Some, I mean, I definitely don't concoct potions during the full moon and sprinkle them at night, but
that's
but
true.
There's a little pagan in there. Sometimes.
Yeah. Awesome. And how long have you been doing this?
I've been farming for over 20 years. I got my start in 1996 at University of Santa Cruz at their sustainable agriculture program.
And you're located here in North Garden near Pippin Hill?
Yeah, I am extremely local, I like to say.
That's great. Say, Featured Farmers Friday adds to the local scene.
I think it connects the folks that are coming here, you know, thinking it's just for a glass of wine and lunch, and then they see who's in the neighborhood, how the land is being used, gives them a sense of what is beyond, you know, just the land right here of this beautiful farm.
farm, makes them think about just the whole agriculture movement, local agriculture movement, and gives them an opportunity to take something home besides a bottle of wine. You know, they can take home some of my produce, some beautiful flowers. So it's just a great way to connect.
Do you participate in any of the farmers markets?
I do. I sell on Saturdays at the Nelson Farmers Market in Nellie's Ford.
Oh, good. Yes, I've been there. That's a good one. That's a good one. I also have Diane Burns here from Pippin Hill. And we heard her at LinkedIn. She was mentioning it was about connections, right? Is that?
Yes, that's right. I think it's a great way for people to see where their food source, where it's coming from.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah,
and absolutely.
And you get tourists here from out of the area, and so then they are able to be exposed to what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. We get a lot of people from the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, from neighboring states that come here all the time.
So you have, are those little tomatoes or are those peppers? Or what
they're
are they?
Called pumpkin on a stick.
Pumpkin on a stick.
And they're actually an ornamental eggplant. They've grown and they fruited and their leaves have fallen off, and they start out green, and then as they mature, they turn orange into that cute little pumpkin on a stick.
Oh my gosh. And how long do they last as an ornament?
They'll last for a good month, and then they'll just lose their luster, shrivel up a little bit. I still have some that I dried from my wedding 5 years ago, so, you know, you can keep them around. So cute. So,
and you've got these giant garlic. That's really beautiful. That's not elfin garlic either, is it? That's
No, that's a variety that they grow here at Pippin Hill. It's called Music Garlic, and it's named after the man who developed it. His last name was Music. And it has a stiff neck. It has great flavor. It's easy to peel, so it's an all-around winner.
Well, I'm definitely going to get some of that before I leave, for sure. This is great. The beautiful, beautiful flowers. So, Jenny, tell us about the importance of local flowers.
Yeah, this is relatively new, which is, you know, odd, that we've been learning about local food and how important that is for our planet. And now people are suddenly like, oh, yeah, flowers too. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, basically, it's the same idea. We're growing in a way where we're not applying chemicals and fertilizers, that we are growing in a way that is healthier for the earth, healthier for the workers, and the flowers that are coming to your event aren't coming from Chile in an airplane, and, you know, the packaging and the extra, if it's a greenhouse with lights, you know, all of the carbon footprint that's attached to those flowers that you're flying in versus ones that have been harvested down the road the day before. They have a longer vase life. They smell better. I mean, you can smell these now. So it just makes sense all around.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
Like the garden that you have, Diane, the native.
Yeah. So we specialize in native plants in the meadow garden, and that's to help rebuild our ecosystem, to bring in our native birds and butterflies and to rebuild all that.
And the pollinators are important.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Jenny, you mentioned that you are also, I guess, next fall going to be selling beef shares for your grass-fed pastured animals.
Yes, we have four Hereford steers, and they are on 15 acres of pasture, so that's, you know, we're extremely undergrazing our pasture. And they have, you know, a watering system that comes off a pond that we put in. Just are part of our own little ecosystem of our farm.
That's awesome.
There's forests, you know, around the pasture where the deer are coming and going, and the birds, the wildlife, that all of it attracts. And, you know, I've seen such a difference since they had to sacrifice one third of an acre for my garden out of their pasture. But what a difference it's made to how many pollinators, how many birds. I mean, I went away for a week on vacation and came back, and a bird had made a nest in my zinnias, and I watched its eggs be hatched, and then just last week the babies were fledged. And, you know, even this morning I was out harvesting a few extra flowers, and like there was a bumblebee asleep on one, so we leave that behind. So, you know, you just are always making space for what you're attracting and bringing in, and it's incredible.
Sounds like,
and I wanted to interject here, folks, that you heard that about the animals and how previously She, you know, did her model and it was great and all that. But once she introduced animals to the farm, things changed, became more vibrant, more pollinators were attracted. That's why farms like Bel Air Farms, who he concentrates on produce and eggs and chickens, but then he shares his farm or leases his farm to, you know, the beef operation and the pork operation. And then, of course, those animals, they'll eat, they'll go through the, you know, the fields after vegetables have been harvested. And, of course, there's always some leftovers. And they get in there and they pick out the leftovers and they fertilize the fields and they contribute to the whole. And I don't know if you remember earlier, I was talking with Elena and she said that the microorganisms in the soil were key, and of course they really are, and I called it squirmy soil because you can just imagine those microorganisms. And let me tell you about the importance of those and how they can really affect how your soil, how your farm will perform. Joel Salatin of Polyface over in the Valley in Swope, Virginia, his fields never freeze, never freeze, doesn't matter how cold it is. They stay above 32 because the microorganisms, or as we call it, the microbial action in that soil is so intense. And, of course, that gives off heat. It keeps the fields above 32. Now, the ground around his house, that he, you know, it's not a field, that freezes hard, just like everything else. Both sides of his farm have fields, and they freeze incredibly hard. I'm walking on Joel's, and it's spongy soil, high grass. You know, the grass was knee high, and he's never watered. It also soaks up the groundwater and the water from the aquifers, and so you never have to water. It's a drought-proof system. They were in the towards the end of a 20 or 25 year drought there in the valley, and he's never watered, and his fields have always been wet. So there you go. Proper maintaining of your fields, the treating the field and your farm as a whole living organism, not only continually regenerates the soil, does not strip it off like Big Ag, and your farm will be drought-proof in many cases. Unbelievable. What a way to live. That's why it's so important to have the local farms. And going back to what I was saying earlier, how people think that unless you have big factory farms, you can't feed all the people in the inner cities and all that sort of thing. And again, that's what they want you to believe. Joel Salatin, again, has a model that could feed the entire United States and not have one big factory farm, not one. But anyway, they don't want you to know that because their profits are what's important to them, not your health. They don't care 2 cents about your health. They want your money, and that's it. So I can't speak strongly enough about how we need to really come up with a model here in Charlottesville so that we can provide our city with local, real food year-round. I would love any suggestions on that. I have my own ideas, but if any of you listening have some ideas, please email me at mcblair, just write them out, mcblair at 947wpvc.org. I will respond. I'm looking for input from our future food citizens. Thank you. Back to Jenny.
They're part of the family.
Yeah, yeah. You give a little bit extra and you get a lot more.
It's amazing. So, Jenny, I suppose the best way for somebody to express an interest or possibly purchase a beef share for next fall would be to see you at the farmer's market in Nelson?
Yes, yeah, on Saturdays from 8 till noon at Nelly's Board is our farmer's market.
Yeah. Did I notice they put up a big tent there for it?
Yes.
So
yeah.
If it's raining, not a problem.
Yeah, exactly. It recovered for the customers to have a dry experience if it's raining. We have music, live music every Saturday. It's a wonderful cooperatively owned farmers market, owned by the farmers themselves. And we have strict guidelines there to keep everything very local. There's a 50-75 mile radius where everything has to come from, and everything that's sold has to be produced by the farmers there.
That's so incredible. And Diana, we, by the way, folks, we're on the veranda at Pippin Hill, and yes, it is raining, and no, we are not getting wet either.
No, it's nice out. I feel like I'm in the Scottish Highlands looking out with a mist hanging down over the mountains. It's
that beautiful. Is so true. That is so true.
It's inspiring here.
It is. It is. Jenny, you mentioned honoring the peoples or the inhabitants that were here before.
Sure. Yeah. There's, of course, we could go back to the native people that were here, how they were stewarding the land, honoring that presence there. You know, when I was putting in my beets this fall, I found an arrowhead, you know, that is, always brings that to mind. But this land, in a more recent history of Pippin Hill, had the history of being the Albemarle County Fairgrounds.
I remember that.
And so I think it's, in a way, an honoring and keeping alive that tradition of bringing farmers to this land and connecting people that used to be here on this land that Pippin Hill is continuing today.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to restore the land, too, by planting a lot of native trees and shrubs and flowers, too.
That is awesome.
And that was very good. That was a great interview. Those folks, Jenny Hopkins of Big Arms Farms and working with Featured Farmer Fridays at Pippin Hill. By the way, look up the Pippin Hill website. I just say pippinhill.com, you'll get it. And you can see their schedule of Featured Farmer Fridays. Really good thing they're doing down there. And so that's just some of the things that are offered right here in the area, in the local area. When you visit one of these farms, make that, you know, go ahead and visit some of these farms. Just take a day, grab maybe the whole family, drive on down there and visit some of these farms, and you will get a sense, just a sense of what it's all about. I mean, there's so many good things going on right here in Charlottesville in the local food movement. And you'll be healthier for it. Trust me on that, you know. And it's now time for my two-minute drill. The 40 years from the late 50s to the late 90s was when the U.S. government started with the best of intentions to encourage the factory farm model through farm subsidies and tax breaks. By the way, an aside, they could do the same thing here if they were to give local farmers incentives and tax breaks so that not only could they pay a living wage, but they would be able to produce more food for us. Today, we're faced with the logical result of another case of changing the natural order of things. Big ag, big meat, big dairy, corporate control of our food system is a recipe for disaster because the corporate model dictates profit over anything else, as opposed to a local small farmer who practices taking care of the soil, the water use, and the general health of the produce and meat products. It'll result in better health of the people, not only physically, but also a community with a general commitment to work together. Boy, is that important. This, of course, will take time. And we here at To Your Health are committed to helping the many true food citizens, like these local farmers that we've talked about and some of the people at City Market, you know, and to help get the word out to you, the general public, our wonderful listeners here at To Your Health. We hope you care about improving your life and your health. The move towards the local food system, of course, it began back in the 60s in, oh, big surprise, California, with the organic food movement. And concerns about the health and environmental risks associated with the synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. That wasn't the only reason they chose to grow foods organically. It was about a commitment to treating the whole farm as a living organism. Gee, where have I heard that before? Not just a profit center. Yeah, they can make money, and that's great. They can feed their family, but they care more about the quality of what they produce. Because if they're producing a low-quality product by using chemical fertilizers and pesticides, then you won't come back anymore. You'll get sick, and you'll wonder why, you know, why. Well, I don't want to support that guy. He doesn't know what he's doing. Well, we need to treat big food the same way. They treat their workers well with a living wage, and they work with the community at large. Big farming corporations have gotten into the organic market, but that's not the point. To be truly healthful, food needs to be raised locally by a farmer who believes the before-mentioned principles, those of soil health, carbon sequestration, and being part of the whole. So let's do this, listeners. Let's research how to become involved. Look up the local Food Justice Network and decide which of the many participating organizations you can donate to or volunteer for. Believe me, they'll be happy. Especially the UACC or City Schoolyard Gardens or the PB&J Fund. There's 16 of those organizations out there, and they are dedicated to helping Charlottesville become more food justice oriented. And if you do volunteer or even donate, you'll be rewarded in ways yet unimagined. I want to thank all my guests today on the interviews, the people at the City Market and you know, Diane Burns and Jenny Hopkins and all those folks. I want to thank you all who download our show as well. And to those of you listening on the live stream as well, especially those of those of you out of the area like Virginia Beach. He says, I hope you hear something here that sparks your desire to know more. Do some research. Remember, participating in community activities, treating your bodies with care, and eating real foods are keys to your health. Thank you very much. We've had a great show today on the last day of September of 2017. Beautiful day out there. And it's high about 74. And we will go to our Spanish programming now. I've had a ball. Thanks, guys.